Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, your host. We've got a great show lined up, so let's get started. And this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 131. It's part two of the Florida Keys 50-mile ultramarathon review. Make sure you check out episode 130 for part one if you're new to the podcast, because this is going to be kind of a continuation of that because it was just too much material to put into one show. I'd like to thank you for downloading the podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave. I'm a regular, ordinary, middle-of-the-pack runner who tries to do extraordinary things such as ultramarathons. And I recently ran the Florida Keys 50-mile ultramarathon, which was just one part of three events, part of the Keys 100, which was a 100-mile solo race as well as a 100-mile relay, and then they had a 50-mile. So I did that. I went down to Key West. It was in the Florida Keys. Started in Marathon, Florida. Went to Key West along Route 1. That was an excellent, excellent race. Bob Becker, race director's outstanding job. I'll talk a little bit more about him later in the podcast. Went down with two buddies of mine, Rodney and John, and all three of us finished. We all ran the same distance, but all had a little bit different experience. Some a little bit more harder than others, but it was just an outstanding time, and I just can't say enough about it. I could go on and on about how much fun it was. It wasn't necessarily as much fun during the race. That's the whole reason you do it, is to have fun doing a hard thing. But when you look back on it, it's just an incredibly rewarding experience, especially when you put all the training in, just, you know, week after week after week of, 40 plus miles. It really pays off when you're able to finish, and everybody finishes a little bit different way, but we all got to the finish line. Okay, as promised in part one, I was going to get into a little bit of the nitty-gritty in part two. And when I say the nitty-gritty, what I mean is some of the nitty-gritty of a real extreme long-distance ultramarathoning, stuff that kind of happens to your body and some weird things, and some of the things that happened to me and what I experienced on race day that may or may not help other people out there who are contemplating doing an ultramarathon. It's definitely not a sipping tea. It's something that's a lot different than a 10K. It's, let's see, it's six times a 10K, nine times a 10K practically, maybe 8.5 times a 10K. And so I'm going to get into a little bit of that, especially how I managed the final 2 hours when I thought I could make a 12-hour finish. And I have to make a note to make sure I do that. Anyway, very early on in the race, I started with Rodney and John. We all started together, and my goal was to do a 7-3 run interval as long as I could. And once again, I stayed with the pack and skipped my first walk break, which I shouldn't have done. But I was able to force a walk break on myself when I all of a sudden had a serious intestinal issue, and it was so sudden that I felt like if I didn't find a restroom pronto, I was going to blow the contents of my colon all over the side of Route 1 and, you know, embarrass myself and make a mess of my clothes. I mean, that's how sudden it was, and so that's the nitty-gritty, okay, in case you're wondering what the nitty-gritty is. Fortunately for me, this was probably 40 minutes into the race, maybe not that far. Fortunately for me, there was a library across the street, and I was with Rodney and John at this time, and I had told them that I was having an issue because just a few minutes before that, I thought I actually had shit myself. And when I say that, okay, that's another part of the nitty-gritty, okay? I gave you a warning at the beginning of the show, so if that kind of crap offends you, you might want to fast forward and or wait to the next episode, because this is kind of this is the worst situation I've ever really had in an ultra marathon. I said, dude, you need to check the back of my pants. So everything was good to go there. I think I just had some strange post-breakfast issues. So I found this library and I ran across the street. And there were some people sitting out front, and definitely after 10 o'clock, because that's why I was kind of questioning why there are people sitting out front. Are they waiting for it to open? Well, the race had started at 10, so I knew it was already after 10 when I looked at the door. So I went in, went straight to the men's room, took care of things, and thank goodness, because, boy, that was something else. And then so we got all cleaned up. But problem was that I had already lubed myself all up for the day. And when I say that, you know, you give yourself a good undercarriage lubrication, because you got a lot of skin that's going to be mushing on each other all day long, and you could really create yourself quite a rash from the sweat and any dust or whatever that gets, you know, down in your shorts or other stuff. Well, when you have a number two emergency, you kind of create a lot of your own debris that you can really mess yourself up. So I had to, at the next aid, not the aid station, but when we met up with our crew, thankfully Rodney carries in his equipment and his supplies, he carries a lot of these baby wipes. So then I had to go find okay, this is another part of the nitty gritty. If I hadn't mentioned that already, that's the nitty gritty. Found myself a nice dumpster to go over and basically just, you know, almost take a shower with baby wipes, because it was the kind of situation where really only a shower could have fixed it. So I was good to go, got lubed up again, and by that time Rodney had gone ahead. So John waited for me, and so this was right before the 7 mile bridge. And that's exactly what it is. It's a 7 mile bridge. And forgive me if I do repeat some of the stuff from the last episode. It's just some stuff's going to overlap. It's just that the bridge is 7 miles long, no land, nothing. You're out there on over the open water. However, you do see land, you know, to your left and to your right, because the Florida Keys kind of goes down into a southwesterly fashion. And there's boats out there, and you can see some other islands, these smaller islands that people have pulled up to in their boats. So it's not like you're in the middle of the ocean and you can't see anything at all. And there's lots of traffic. And also Bob Becker had arranged to cone off the shoulder for the runners, which was just an outstanding thing on his part, because it kind of gave you another little buffer from traffic. So I ran that with John, and that's when I put on my Camelback. And if you had listened to previous shows, you realize the issues I had with the Camelback. Got the good bladder in there from my Ultimate Direction Diablo. My wife had filled it up with water and pretty much just sucked on that thing the whole way across. I also took a bottle of Ultra, which I'll talk about, because I was going to talk about how I hydrated all day and what I used S caps and the Ultra endurance drink. So, you know, got over the 7 mile bridge and then hooked up with my crew again, and felt much better with the whole undercarriage issue. And the reason I bring that up is because when you're out on, you know, you're going to end up taking a number two at some point. When you're out on a endurance run, it's going to be 12 hours or more, 12 hours or less. At least I do. I have. That's just you know, what happens to me. And you can really screw up your whole day if you don't get yourself nice and clean, because what will happen when you get in the shower later, you're going to burn so bad that it's just going to ruin everything. And I've had that happen to me before. And once again, that's the part of the nitty gritty, if I hadn't already mentioned that. So that's the undercarriage care part of the podcast that I wanted to hit on. Now, I had some mental issues very early on in the race, which was really, really surprising. And it was very similar to when I ran the Sterling Gym 40-mile ultramarathon back in 2009 in Wartrace, Tennessee, utterly exhausted at 15 miles, just, you know, the wall, if you can remember what that feels like if you've ever hit the wall. I hit the wall at 12 miles in this race, and very, very surprised, disappointed, didn't understand what was happening, mental issues very early on. It was really hot, really, really hot. I got in the car, just sat there for a little bit, and kind of wondered, you know, how am I ever going to finish this thing? But I was so tired, had been sweating for, you know, a couple hours, was just putting so much liquid in my body. I just had no idea how I was going to keep going. I had no motivation at that point to keep going, and I'm not really sure how I did get out of that car. But one thing I do remember I wrote a race report for my running group. We always exchange information. I remember writing in that I was wasting time sitting in the car because I wasn't really cooling off in the car that much. You know, you're not going to really cool off that much sitting in front of an air conditioner because I didn't really want to close the door because I didn't want to get out of the heat. I just needed some cool air to blow on me. And I just remember thinking, you know, just I'm wasting time sitting here. I could, you know, if I got mental issues and I got problems, I might as well walk and make some progress while I'm working these things out. And at this point in time, John and I had separated. I'm not really sure when we did. We kind of saw each other here and there at crew stops, but we weren't running together anymore. And the reason that that happened is that I had told him that I wanted to take a little bit longer than a 3-minute break. And we were doing the 7 and 3 once we started that. And we were doing that together and really enjoyed running with them and catching up, actually, because we don't run together that much back home. So, you know, we had to go to Florida to catch up, and he's got twin babies, and, you know, we live in different parts of the metro area, but we have a lot in common when it comes to running. We also went to the same college, graduated different years, but, you know, we've got a lot in common. And it was good to catch up with him, but what happened was that I wanted that 3-minute walk break to be a little bit longer, and he wasn't ready for that. He was doing really well. So I just said, hey, man, just go ahead. You know, I'll catch up with you. We'll see each other again. And I think I got a little confused. What happened was I think my mental issues were starting at that point, and then that's when I got in the car a little bit later and really started having some problems. But I got out of the car and just kind of walked it off. And what I realized was that I was actually feeling sorry for myself. And I was doing a lot of self-talk, trying to figure out, why are you feeling sorry for yourself? You're the one to put yourself in this situation. You know, you arranged this trip. You signed up for this race. You're the one that did the training and thought that you could actually handle this heat down here. You know, why are you feeling sorry for yourself? But yet I still was. And I was trying to get past that, just trying to figure out a way to get through that part of my brain that was just not allowing me to have a positive experience. Well, what I did, I just walked it out. I must have walked for probably, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And I eventually got through it. I got a little bit of food at one of the crew stops. I drank a lot of these boost drinks, which was really something that really helped me. And I'll mention that here in a little bit later in the show because I've got a list of stuff I want to go through. It felt a little better. I don't think I was taking in enough liquid. I kind of upped that a little bit. And another thing that had happened is that with me and Rodney being separated, our crew had a hard time tending to the both of us, and there were a couple times where I ran out of my 2 16-ounce water bottles because I carried 2 of them at all times. I gave up the Camelback because what happened was after my wife refilled it after the 7-mile bridge, it was just too heavy, and I, you know, all of a sudden didn't like it anymore, and I knew as soon as I saw them again I was going to get rid of it and just stick to the 2 water bottles and hope that they were able to get to me every now and then. But what happened was John's wife, Beth, hooked me up with some water, and then I actually got filled up with another crew. So the other crews that were out there tending to their runners helped out others, and I'm sure that my wife and Tamara did the same. So I walked through it. I finally got over that wall, and fortunately for me, I came very close to not getting to another one. I came close to hitting another wall later in the race, but not one that was as bad as that one. And so I knew that if I got past that, which was a really, really low point, you know, I was questioning the whole thing. I was questioning, is it gonna be possible for me to finish this race? And I was already starting to have pains where I thought my kidneys were, like my lower back. And so my brain was getting worried about that. And I was really starting to think that maybe I couldn't do it and I was gonna DNF. And that disappointed me a lot because I would have been very surprised if I had to do that so early in the race. But somehow I got through it. So, you know, what I'll remember in the future is that when I get to a real, real low point, just keep moving forward. It's that relentless forward progress, 1 foot in front of the other. You probably heard that before. You know, head down and just drive it. And that's what I did. And I got through it. It took me probably almost 30 minutes to, and I was probably almost in tears. I know at one point in time I was kind of yelling at myself, you know, the self-talk, you know, why are you feeling sorry for yourself? You got to snap out of this. This is just ridiculous that you're, you know, it was like somebody else was talking to me, but, you know, obviously it was me talking to myself, but I was talking out loud and almost yelling to try to snap myself out of this low funk that I was in. And of course it didn't really help matters much that in some of those parts of Route 1 that go through some stagnant, real low-lying water, it pretty much equals the smell of the inside of a porta-john on a hot summer day. So, you know, that didn't really make it much easier when everything kind of stunk and, you know, you'd see roadkill on the side of the road and all of a sudden it'd be right in front of you and you'd have to go around it. So I got through that and finally made it. A big part of the day was managing my feet. I've talked about this before. I have very sensitive feet, and unless you think that I've never done anything to fix that, I walk around barefoot all the time in my house. I don't walk around outside barefoot because I'm always afraid I'll cut my feet, or I don't want my feet to get but so dirty. You know, usually got flip flops on, or I've had to switch to some flip flops with arch supports. So, you know, I've done what I can to toughen my feet up, short of running in bare feet on concrete. I, for some reason, I just don't think that makes a whole lot of sense to me. But I had a management plan for my feet. I had a foot plan, and the plan was to keep them as dry as possible, switch out socks, switch shoes, retape, and use cornstarch powder, I think I used baby powder, which I thought was going to be okay, to absorb moisture. And I don't think I really needed the powder as much because that just kind of made a mess of the car. But what I did when I stopped, and I've mentioned before that I probably lost almost a full hour managing my feet, but that was going to be the only way I was going to be able to finish, was to take my shoes and socks off. I did this 4 times, and take a towel and just totally dry my feet off. Couple occasions I used a very cold towel, and what I was trying to fight, I'm trying to fight this deadly triangle of heat, moisture, and friction, which is what creates blisters, bad blisters, at least for me. I used a cold towel, cooled off my feet, dried them, reapplied duct tape across the ball of the foot, which is where I had the most problems before, powdered them, and then put Vaseline between my toes and along my heels. And even with doing all that, I still blistered on my heels and in between my toes. It didn't blister on the bottom of my feet, although I did come very close on my left foot to the skin breaking open on the side. And if it did, I told Monica when I saw this, my wife, I said, look, you know, if this breaks open, I'm going to have to stop, because I couldn't go home and be a burden to my family with bum feet like I did before. And I would have been disappointed highly. But it would have been my excuse, because it was, you know, I could have used my feet as an excuse and not my mental strength or my mental toughness. So that was going to be my crutch. And I just remember thinking that that would be an easy excuse. Oh, you know, my feet blistered so bad, I had to stop. That would have been a lot easier for me to take home and rationalize than stopping, because I couldn't mentally go on. Fortunately, my feet stayed together and I was able to go on and obviously finished in 11 hours and 52 minutes. So I did that a couple times and it seemed to work. Now, there were a few times where the way the shoulder slanted, it was driving me crazy how much pressure was putting on one blister I had on my heel, but thankfully it never broke open. So I never had any raw skin exposed that I was wearing down. And, you know, of course, if that had happened, then my feet would have started bleeding, and that wouldn't have been good, because that takes a while to heal. So my plan, the plan to keep my feet together did work. It needs some work if I'm going to do another 50 miler, because my toes blistered pretty bad between them. So what I think I'll do is, if I do another 50, I'll experiment with the individual taping of my toes that had the hot spots to head them off. And the idea of the taping, if you're not familiar with that, if it just seems very foreign to you, is to eliminate the friction, because if you don't have friction on your skin, you can't create any heat, enough heat to break it open, and it can't get as moist. So it's just a technique that does help. And you know, God bless those people that don't have any foot problems. You know, they don't know. They might have other issues, but they certainly don't know what I'm going through. So the key was keeping them totally dry. And, you know, it was very nice when I was able to sit in front of the air conditioner vent and change my shoes out. Although since there was so much, the car was kind of tight with our gear and whatnot in it, I made a mess of when I used the powder to, and I think I remember I just got it all over the, it was black, it was a black interior, and I'm thankful to Tamara and Monica for going and vacuuming the car later. So that was the foot care issue that, you know, I was a bit naive with it. So if you're an experienced ultramarathoner and you're listening to this, clearly, you know, you might have different ideas, but that's what I did, and it worked. I was able to recover the week after the race with very minimal discomfort. Wore shoes within, I think, 2 days after the race, I was wearing regular shoes again. And but to be totally honest, I don't think I could have gone to work the Monday after the race. I probably could have gone to work Tuesday. I would have taken Monday off. I took the whole week off because I went on another trip anyway. And I did it intentionally in case I did get hurt. I didn't want to have to take sick leave. But I think I would have been able to go to work Tuesday. It would have been a little painful, but I would have been able to put shoes on Monday. No, I just needed another day for all the liquid and the liquid and the bubbles on my skin to kind of settle down a little bit. Okay, so what are some of the things I did to keep myself cool? The main thing was I used a cool bandana, a cool brand bandana. It has some material in it that soaks up water and it kind of cools as it evaporates, and I switched that out almost every time and had it soak in a cooler in the back of the car that was just, it had cold washcloths and ice water. That worked out pretty good, and many thanks to my crew for always arranging to have that out there. Carried two water bottles, two 16-ounce Ultimate Direction water bottles. These have the hand grips that really work well for me. You can tighten it down on your hand, and then you're not expending energy holding the bottle. And it has the tops you can pull out with your, just pull it up with your teeth and squeeze it in your mouth. It works out pretty good. I combine that with the Camelback. Now these water bottles are 16-ounce, and they're 20-ounce if you pour all the way to the top. And what I did was I used Ultra Drink, which is something that was has no, I'll tell you a little bit about that. It's got no fructose, and that's the main thing, is I drank this all day long. And it's part of the S-Caps whole situation. I can't remember what the guy's name that put it all together. I just for some reason don't have that at the forefront of my brain at the moment. I drank that all day long, never got tired of it. You get it in single serving packets, and I had bought a 2-pound box of it, which was enough for the whole day, and I even brought some home. That cost $13.50, so it was pretty reasonable. The reason I liked it so much is that, like I said, it doesn't have the fructose, and you know, you can't drink Gatorade all day long with all that crud in it without eventually it upsetting your stomach and or, you know, vomiting it up. Now, I don't know what happened to me early on in the race when I had explosive number two, which was mostly liquid form, but I assure you I had not had a lot of Ultra at that point for it to really do much. I think that was my breakfast. I kind of varied a little bit that morning from my regular breakfast. I'm not really sure why I did that, and that could have played a role. Not really worried about that now. I will just eat very bland stuff next time. But the Ultra has energy, electrolytes, obviously. It's an orange flavor. And you can mix it with cola for more energy and some caffeine. And like I said, it has no fructose, which was the biggest thing for me because I knew I can't drink Gatorade for a long, real long period of time. Now, I'll combine that with the use of the S-Caps. And the S-Caps help with, they alleviate cramping. And I didn't cramp at all that day, I guess I shouldn't be surprised because I've never had a cramping problem. The only time I really have cramps is when I wake up at night and sometimes my leg will be cramped, but I don't do it when I run. And has effective amounts of sodium and potassium. And what I did is for heavy sweating, what you do is you take them every half hour, and that's what I figured running in Florida couldn't really get much heavier than that. I took them every half hour. pretty much on the half hour with some exceptions. And what I mean by that is because sometimes I would forget to take it because all of a sudden another half hour had passed. So what happened to me during this ultra marathon is you kind of lose track of time. It's a strange vortex to kind of be in. Oh gosh, I got to take another SCAP. It's, you know, half past the hour again. And it just, the day just rolls on by. You know, you just keep going forward. And one of the best things I love about endurance running is that you pretty much block out everything else that's going on in your life except for what you're doing that day, for, you know, what happens next. And I've mentioned this before in previous shows, that's what the cool thing I like about long distance running is that pretty much the only thing that you're thinking about is what happens next. And there's very few moments in life that are like that. You know, it'd be comparable to, you know, right before you get married, or, you know, the birth of a child, you know, right before you graduate from college, something kind of like that. You know, you're not really, or maybe even when you get to the top of a roller coaster, you're not really thinking about anything else at all except for what is immediately getting ready to happen. And in ultra running, for me, I really do block out a lot of other stuff, and the only thing I'm really thinking about is getting to the next crew stop or getting to the next aid station. But there's pleasant thoughts along the way, because it's kind of liberating to be free from thinking about other things. And I think that's how I kind of got in that vortex of losing track of time, where, oh, all of a sudden it was half past the hour, it's the top of the hour, I got to take an SCAP. I think that helped me. And I guess you could say I never really lost the physical energy to go on. Early on, I had those mental problems. But once I got past that, I always wanted to keep going. I didn't want to just sit in the car and just dwell on how hot it was. I just knew I wanted to get to that finish line, and I think using the Ultra drink and the S-caps helped. And I'll probably stick to that, and the next time I do a 50, I'll definitely be getting Ultra. At every single crew stop, I filled up one bottle with the Ultra and one bottle with water every single time. I always had one of each. And I never got tired of the orange drink. And, you know, you hear people say, oh, don't you, you know, like I remember I did one marathon one time. I got so sick of blue Powerade, I don't think I'll ever drink it again. I never got tired of the orange Ultra, and that's because it doesn't have that fructose in it that just kind of overburdens you. Met several people down there, which was really cool. Ran with a girl, Jody, for a while. We kept passing each other, doing our walking and running. Met a guy named... it was either Eric or Jay. One of them lived in Florida. The other guy drove down from Charlotte to crew for him. I think Jay was, he was a firefighter from Charlotte, North Carolina. It was really neat to talk to them because we saw them at a convenience store on the way to the starting line. And this was his first 50 miler, and he was hoping to finish between 9 and 10 hours. And when he told me he was a 3:15 marathoner, I knew he wasn't going to have any problem with that. Also, we met a guy named Mark, who at the post-race party, who had done the 100-miler. He brought his whole family down from Pennsylvania, and he had just kind of just finished, I think, a little bit before the post-race party. So he was in a very strange mental place, but talked to his wife for a while, and him, and they're extremely nice. His sister came over from England to pace him, and she came with her husband, and so it was, they were just having a big family event, and I wished him all the best. I also talked with Angela for a while. I think she was from Jamaica. And one of the coolest things that happened during the day for me was, I don't know what the guy's name was, I'm just going to call him the watermelon dude, but it was a guy crewing for a friend of his, and he had cut up all this watermelon, and they were eating it out on the tailgate of his pickup truck. And he's like, hey man, don't you want some watermelon? And I came over there, and that's when I realized I have got to remember to arrange for watermelon the next time I do an ultra marathon, because it was really good. Not only does it fill you up, kind of like cantaloupe does, because it's kind of dense, but it's got water in it, and well, obviously because it's called watermelon. It was just so refreshing. I just got to remember to do that again. So that's an idea I know I'm going to try to remember. What I did to fuel myself over the course of the day, other than the watermelon, and I ate three, I think I had four, I had made four peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and I think I ate all four of them. I remember eating three. I think Monica told me I ate all four, and I drank all my Boosts. I think I had six of them. The Boosts are those energy drinks for old people. They're kind of the same thing as an Ensure. I have been using those in long runs for quite some time, and There was only one time that it ever, one of those did me wrong, is when I ran the Outer Banks Marathon. I had one of those close to the end, and when I finished, I vomited because I was trying to break 4.5 hours. All of a sudden, I got this crazy wild hair that I was going to break 4.5 hours when I wasn't even close to it. And actually, I ran 4:30:16. You know, why you get crazy like that, I'm not really sure, but I vomited that up at the end, and it really hurt coming up. And kind of burned, and I kind of got burned out on Boost at that point. But now I'm back on it, and I like the strawberry. Unfortunately, it's kind of expensive. If you get, I think, a six-pack of them is $8 about. I got to find a cheaper place. They did me right. They really did. And I took all of those at different times. But I really never really had a full appetite. I think it was just the heat. It just kind of subsided. So I'm not really sure where I got all my energy from, because I know I had to eat, and I did eat early. I had a couple goos here and there, but that was just when I was kind of feeling a little low. I took a goo just to get a little bit of a lift. I wore my Garmin, and I was debating whether to do this or not. I did not wear my Garmin when I ran my first 50 mile, and the reason for that was because the battery didn't charge it. And so I want to put it on, it cut off, I turned it back on, it kept cutting off, so I just went with my regular watch. I decided to wear the Garmin, if nothing else, just to see what my pace was when I was walking, and see what my pace was during some of the running portions. I just thought, you know, it might be something interesting to look at. And so I kept it on, you know, used it as the stopwatch. And when it was all said and done, the Garmin recorded 50.3 miles. And it actually, the chip timing shorted me, let's see, I can't really remember what it was. Let me look it up real quick, because my finishing time was 11:52:22. And what this Garmin is telling me is that, let's see, I ran 11:52:09. And I started it when I crossed the chip mat. And I actually, you know what the funny thing is, I actually stopped it well after crossing the finish line. You know, I didn't want any pictures that my wife was going to be taking with me stopping my watch, you know. Of course, it ended up that way anyhow. So I'm trying to figure out where they got 11:52:22. Not that it really matters or anything, but, you know, you always wonder a little bit. So I did an additional 0.3 miles, you know, with the undercarriage maintenance. So I thought that was kind of funny. And so that's what the Garmin is. And as you can tell, I just checked my Garmin, and I have not run since May 14th because my 50.3 miles is still on my Garmin. So anyway, I'll probably wear it again. All right, let me talk a little bit about Bob Becker. He was the race director, and this guy was just outstanding. Not only he had to have been up for 48 hours straight. There's just no doubt about that. He started the 100-mile race at 6 a.m., and the relay race. No, the relay people started at 6 a.m. The 100-milers started at 6:10 a.m. I think they wanted to get the relay people up ahead of the 100-milers just so they, that I guess, as a courtesy. And then he drove 50 miles to start my race, the one I participated in Marathon Key, at 10 a.m. But you know, in order to start that race at 6 a.m., he probably had to get there at 4 a.m. to get the starting line set up, chip mats, you know, the whole nine yards. And not to mention, the night before, he had to stay up to hand out people's pack, their race swag, which was sweet, by the way. Got some cool stuff. Definitely for, you know, when you pay over $100 for a race entry. You know, I wasn't really expecting much. I was kind of expecting a shirt. But we got a backpack, and, you know, stuff in the backpack, and a water bottle, and a shirt, and of course, nice finishing medal, all those kinds of things. But anyway, so you know this man had to be up forever, because he was up all the next day when he set everything up, all past midnight, because people were still finishing. I think he stayed at the finish line. He might have gotten an hour or two of shut-eye, and then he had the post-race party the next day. And, you know, he gave out the awards, and we got our picture taken with him and got to chat with him a little bit. And, you know, told him we came down from Virginia, and told him I wasn't sure if I could actually come return to Florida to run that race again because it was so hot. But I assured him that I would recommend that event to anyone that asked me. And so I will. I recommend this event to anyone who is looking for one hell of a 50-mile challenge, road ultra. It is extremely hot. But obviously, it's possible to finish it. You know, I'm an ordinary regular mail the pack person, and it was a lot of fun. So anyway, I'm happy to recommend this race to anybody. Bob Becker was very personable and just a real nice, all-around nice guy, and just put on an excellent event, and my hat's off to him. And I know he's got a company out of Florida that he puts on other events, and I wish it was easier for me to get to Florida, because I'm attracted to events that he would put on because of the care and attention that he puts towards them. And I've learned from him as the race director for the Ashland Railroad Run 10K is that it is okay to pay attention to those details, because there are people that appreciate that a lot, because they're looking for an experience. And I went down there, Bob, I don't think you listened to the podcast, but I went down there looking for one hell of an experience, and you certainly delivered, and so my hat's off to you. Thank you very much. And the last thing I want to hit on before I get to the email bag section of the show is how I managed the last 2 hours of the race. It became evident at some point, and I don't remember exactly where, that it looked like I was going to be able to finish under 12 hours. And that was kind of a little bit of a goal of mine. Of course, my biggest goal was to finish. Second goal was to come somewhere close to where I did my first 50-miler, although you can't compare these distances exactly the same, because it's, you know, it's like the old cliche, it's comparing apples to oranges. It's different terrain, different weather, different everything except for the distance. But still, you know, my 12 hours 48 minutes stuck in my head is what I did last time. And so when it became evident that there was a chance that I was going to be able to break 12 hours, that became my focus. Now, like I said, I don't remember exactly when that was, but it became very clear that all I had to do, I had 7 miles to go with 2 hours to go, and I had to decide, I didn't need to break 11 and a half hours. I got focused on 12, and I said, okay, which hour am I going to do 3 miles in? Which hour am I going to do 4 miles in? And you have to understand that when you get to this point in time, you're not running very fast. You're doing a lot of power walking, if you want to call it that. You're run walking, you're running to the next light pole, you're walking to the next one, you're running to the next one, you're walking, you're running back and forth, you're running a tenth of a mile, you walk a tenth, you run a tenth, any way you can to keep going forward, to keep tricking yourself that you're going along faster than just a crawl. So I don't remember what I did, but obviously I came in at 11:52, and it was almost a relief knowing that I've got a whole hour to cover 3 miles, and I could probably walk that if I wanted to. So that's how I managed the last 2 hours, and I'm going to remember that for the next time, because if I had gotten my ass in gear a little bit more, and maybe I could have gotten an 11 and a half. I don't know. I mean, of course, you know, what do? You Monday morning quarterback yourself so much. You know, I finished the damn race. That's good enough for me, right? Okay, let's get to the email bag section of the show, and I've got quite a few that I want to hit on. Without making the show too long, so let's hit on some of the emails real briefly here, and let's see who checked in this week. All right, I heard from Buffer, and Buffer ran the Florida 50. I didn't finish, unfortunately. He had a medical issue on the side of the road, and I think he might have been, I don't think he was taken off in an ambulance, but he might have been one of the people that an ambulance tended to. But he has posted an excellent account of his experience at wickedlost.com. That's his blog, and I'm going to link to his post about the ultra marathon at ashlanddave.podbean.com. But if you want to go to show 130 and look in his comments, he's linked to it, and it's a very cool race story. Sorry you didn't finish, Buffer. I know you get down there again, but very detailed, and that must have been pretty scary to pass out on the side of the road. It sounds like that's what happened. Appreciate you listening to the show, and thanks for checking in. And I wasn't able to get the video to work for the start. I'll have to check on that again. I appreciate that. Also heard from Chris in Georgia. Said he enjoyed the Florida race report. Thanks for checking in, Chris. I really appreciate that. Heard from Bama Runner. He checked in. He said he was looking forward to part two. Also heard from Christina from Lazy Bones Running. And she says she uses Aquifer where needed, in reference to referencing some of the nitty-gritty portions of part two that I talked about. And Christine also said she went to lunch with Adam from the I Am Boring website and talked about my feet. So I thought that was quite interesting. And she has invited me out to Arizona for an ultra to experience some true heat. So Christina, thank you for that invitation. I'll have to look up to see if there's any races out there that could truly kill me. So maybe I'll be talking to you more about that. Christine and I have a regular dialogue going. Tom checked in, said he's looking forward to part two. Appreciate it, Tom. Also heard from Mandy, and Mandy had suggested that I take the nobody out of Ordinary Miller Pack, regular nobody, when I introduce the podcast. So, Mandy, I have done that, and she says if I broke 12 hours in the Florida Keys in an ultra marathon, then I'm definitely not a nobody anymore. So, Mandy, thanks for that suggestion, and it was very good. I'm definitely going to take you up on that. Heard from Shelly, and she's sending her well wishes for the 50. And back in an old email, I'd asked her if she was going to be doing the Patrick Henry Half Marathon. She said she didn't know yet. That's coming up on, where is that coming up? I wrote that down somewhere. August 27th of this summer. She says she's not too sure yet. She did qualify for the Half Fanatic, so she's in that. And well, Shelly, I hope to see you out there. I plan to be out there one way or the other. Also heard from Sandy. Sandy had asked she and I also have a regular dialogue going, and she had asked a number of questions about the race. But I wanted to answer one that she had asked, and that's about pacers. Yes, the pacers were allowed. I didn't use one simply because we just didn't have enough people down there to do that. We had our crew members in one car, and it was pretty much enough for two people to manage two runners. But they were allowed, and also muling was allowed. And if you're not sure what muling is, just in general, Sandy, I'm sure you do, but muling is when your pacer carries your water or any of your food or your gear. That was allowed in this race. Most ultras, that's not allowed, which means you have to carry your own water supply, and your pacer has to carry his or her own water supply. They can't carry it for you. Anyway, thanks for the email, Sandy. Sorry I couldn't answer more of your questions right away, but like I said, we have that regular dialogue going. A couple upcoming races, the Chesty Puller 10K in West Point on June 25th. That was something I wanted to do, but I'm not going to be able to because I'm just not available that day. But I've got two races signed. I haven't signed up for the Patrick Henry Half. That's August 27th, and that's a course change for this year, which is outstanding. The start and finish are now going to be in the town of Ashland, center of the universe. So we've got our start and finish of the Patrick Henry Half Marathon right here in town, which is awesome, which means I can walk to the start. Annapolis 10 miler up in Annapolis, Maryland, which is the day after August 28th. And you know, it's funny, there was a time when I thought I wouldn't be able to do a half marathon on a Saturday and a 10 miler on a Sunday, and now I've done almost double those distances on Saturday and on Sunday. It's kind of funny how it's evolved. The best thing about doing the Annapolis 10 miler is that I got a good friend, Lummox, who lives up in the Annapolis area. He has signed up for his first 10 miler, and I'm going to run that with him. So I'm really looking forward to that, and hopefully he'll get his training to a point. I told him he really only needed to get his training up to just about between 7 and 8 miles, and then on race day we'll go ahead and do the 10 miles. And then looking farther ahead, the Cool Spring Turkey Trot 5K, which is November 19th. That's in King William, Virginia. Good friend of mine, Stephanie, directed that race last year. They're doing it again, and I'll be helping her at the finish line. So I've got a nice busy fall. I might throw some other stuff in there somewhere. And I got one other email from Christy, and this might be a mass email thing she's doing, but I'm not sure. But I might be I'm getting a free book out of it, it looks like, that I'm going to be able to review, and I'll talk more about that in the podcast if it's good. But it's a book by a guy named Dr. Michael Yeses about explosive running. And I'm not talking about explosive diarrhea running. Anyway, I'm going to include the audio clip here at the end of the show, and you can listen to that if you'd like. But I'm also going to be getting his book sent to me, and I'm going to read it, and I'll talk more about it. If it's good, and if there's some good stuff in it, I'll definitely share that with the runners. And if you're interested in that, or if you've heard about it, it's dryeses.com. That's dryeses.com. .com. I'll put a link at ashlanddave.podbean.com if you want to check it out. If you want more info, looks like you have to kind of sign into the website. I couldn't really get around it too much without having to sign in. I don't like making profiles on every site I go to, but if you're interested, check that out. And like I said, I'll read the book when I get it, if I get it, and I'll share that with the listeners if it's interesting. I got a couple other emails that came in kind of late after I got the show went into production mode. So I'll include those in the next show. One from Dr. Smitty that I wanted to hit on. He is planning a 40 miler for his 40th birthday, but he's doing it a little bit non-traditional means, and I'm hoping to be a part of that. So anyway, that's the show for this week. Hopefully enjoyed part two of the Florida Keys Ultra Marathon. After this show, there may be one more episode in reference to the race that might be getting something, doing something with Mandy and Rodney. Maybe even John, if I can get him maybe to call in to talk shoe. We'll see if we can get something like that together. If not, that'll be it for the Florida Keys 50 until something else comes up. I don't want to talk about it too much because then, it is kind of fun talking about ultra marathons. Anyway, that's it for this week. This is Ashland Dave, and I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. Y'all have a good week.
Like one of the first things that you would find in his book, which is kind of unique, in fact, it has many unique features, and I'll try bringing out each one of these, is the technique aspect. There's a whole chapter devoted to the biomechanics of running, how you run. And I have multiple runners, sprinters and long distance runners, and some even in between. And we shot all these at very high, fast speeds, and then we made cinematograms out of them. Once I happened to open up, right now is Barbosa, Jose Barbosa, who was a four-time Olympian. Even have aspects of what happens to your foot in barefoot running. See, everyone is now talking about barefoot running. I was talking about barefoot running 11, 12 years ago, and how it plays a very valuable role. It has different views, not only the side view, but also front views and rear views. So we look at the runner from all different aspects. And not just looking at the pictures, we also go into how effective the running is. We take a look at each joint action, the thigh drive, or bringing the thigh forward in a run. What role does it play? Which muscles are involved? How is it involved? How should the rear leg be? So we'll take a look at all of these different factors to figure out what makes the best or most efficient or effective running. This becomes the key. Today, I have seen many methods of running that have come out, pose method, chi running, and so on. And most of these are described in a stationary standing position. And if they show you running, there he goes, and you're supposed to catch it. But they don't look at it and study it to see exactly what's going on.